My name is Greg, and I'm an alcoholic. I'm grateful. My sobriety date is 5/16/01. And before I got here, life was a little different. When I went through the 12 steps and kind of did my inventory, and I had to take a look at myself to find out where and how I started drinking. And I can recall when I was 8 or 9 years old, and I think it was stepdad number two. He liked to drink Johnny Walker Red, and he showed me how to make his Johnny Walker Red on the rocks with a little bit of water. And then he said, "Now taste this and make sure that, you know, it tastes like this all the time." And I said, "Okay." Later on in life, I said, "Why am I putting water in there?" And then he also worked at Carling Brewery up in Washington, and he had 10 cases of beer in the closet, you know, Black Label, they called it. And me and my friend Eddie, we said, "Well, he's got 10 cases of, we take a six-pack out of the bottom three, who's going to know?" You know, that's my first time getting drunk and loving it, you know. And then skip forward to 1973, 16 years old, and stepdad number four? No, five. He says, "Hey, we're moving to Alaska," you know. And the pipeline was coming up, and 16 years old, but drinking age is 19 in Alaska. Marijuana was decriminalized. It was a wonderful place to go to high school. And I fell into a good crowd that had plenty of supplies, and I learned how to get those supplies. And then by the time I was 17, because my birthday's in January, December, that December when I was 17, it got to the point, "Well, as long as you live in my house, you do as I say." And I was like, "Okay, see ya." So I left. But I did. I got a job as a dishwasher in a hotel in the afternoon, and I continued to go to high school. And I made it all the way to almost the end of the semester because I had gotten some friends and I got my own apartment. So you're in high school, you have your own apartment, and you're going to school. You know, I made it almost with a month before graduation, you know. But it was, you know, the party was on. That's how I started my career, in doing whatever there was. I believe there was some hallucinogenics and some opiates and things like that that went along with it, you know. And I was just out of control, and I never knew why, you know, who I was running from or what I was running from. And it was a matter of seeing how fast and how far I could go. And so through the years, you know, because I always had a job, you know, in my industry there was plenty of work, so you could keep yourself alive. And because I know I had to work in order to get my booze. And in the industry I worked, I worked in the food business, so I was able to trade booze for food for booze, easy. And it was just always there, you know, always enough. And so fast forward in about, you know, when I was 38, I worked at a place and met a lady that I hadn't, that wasn't like me at all, and somehow we ended up moving in together and then getting married. And when my daughter was born, she was about 2.5 years old, and she actually, they used to have a preschool right here at Palisades, and she was coming here. And one day I worked a shift from 5 to 1:30, and I used to come home and have a few beers and some other outside issues, and then by 5 o'clock, you know, I was okay to go pick her up. And they smelled alcohol on my breath, and the lady, the audacity, said I could not pick up my daughter. And I thought, "Well, who the hell do you think you are?" You know. And she called my wife, and they says, "Don't pick her up." And so that kind of was a point where I'd known I'd been an alcoholic for a long time, kind of, you know, because I ended up, you know, I'd be sitting in the bars with my good friends, and you know, we'd be solving the problems, and you know, I was a great alcoholic of, "I'm going to build the bridge across the world, and I'm going to do this, and I'm going to do that." If I only had the money, but yet, you know, I could drop 100, 200 bucks a night no problem. But I never had money for all these great projects. So that kind of started the ball rolling, and it was a matter of, and it was actually my wife that says, well, they have a meeting here at this church on Monday nights. And so I said, okay. So I said, oh, I'll get her off my back. I went to that meeting, and, you know, my head was on fire, my ass was falling off, and, you know, I cried and blubbered and, you know, and kind of took the heat off for a week or two, and I said, well, I can do this myself. And then in the meantime, I got let go from the last job that I had, and it wasn't for, it was for something else. It was for, I told a dirty joke, you know, so they had a zero tolerance on that, but yet everybody did it. And through my inventory, I realized that I was just an ass, you know, to be around and treated my fellow workers like that, and they were looking for something to get rid of me. And so, but there again, there was a little severance package, you know, and my family had, you know, she moved out for a little while, and I thought, oh great, this is great, man, you know, I get to drink how I want and do my other stuff. And I was the most miserable person in the world. I just, you know, here I was, I couldn't get high, couldn't get drunk, and couldn't stop. And that was my turning point. And so I said, I got to do something. And then my family said, you know, well, we're coming back to the house, but you're leaving if you continue. And so, okay, I'm not going to do, you know. And so I started calling recovery homes, and BOA was the only ones that were dumb enough to let me go down there after about 4 days of harassing them. But you know what? That turned out to be the greatest thing in my life, because I made it there, and I went through their 5-day detox and 10-day program, and I learned a little bit about what recovery was, but I didn't know nothing. But what they said was, you need to go to AA meetings and find out what to do afterwards. You know, you have a few tools. And so I started going to the meetings. I knew I was done, though. When I was down in that detox, there was a point where you know, they had the meetings in there, and I heard somebody, one of the panels came in, and they said, you know, they says, hey, listen to a similarity and not a difference. Because, you know, before I was, you know, like, hey, I'm not like this guy because he's, you know, been up for 47 days, and I'm not like this guy because he's shaking and sweating, you know, and thought, that's not me. And then I realized, wait a minute, I'm here, you know, I have no other place to go. And so I kind of knelt down that day, you know, and I knelt down, and I said, I don't know what to do. What is there to do? You know, and I asked God to help me. And it just was right there in the midst of the chaos. And after that, I went to sleep. And the next morning, that day was just a little bit easier. Just a little bit easier. You know, something must have happened. I don't know. And so I made it through the program. And by the good fortunes that you know, my wife is a blessed saint, you know, sometimes. But she put up with it. And there was a contingency. She said, well, you can come back in, your daughter. And when she picked me up from that place, you know, my daughter, who was 2.5, and she says, Daddy, you no more time out, okay? You know, and I started crying, you know. But that's the thing, is I have emotions today because I've stuck those emotions for years before that, because I didn't want to feel of my dysfunctional family and, you know, and the way it, all that, and I just stuffed it. I just didn't want anything to do with it. So, and I found out, I came to these rooms, and I found out, you know what, it's okay to feel things. You know, it's okay. So I went to a men's meeting, and I heard my story again. But I heard laughter, man. There was guys in there telling jokes and you know, and living. Oh, to backtrack a little bit, when the first meeting I came in here, and you know, everybody was having fun and laughing, and I thought, man, they've got to be drinking somewhere. There's no way guys can be this happy. You know, and before that, that track is before I got let go from that job in there. It's like I was telling my wife that I was going to the meeting, and I used to come in and sit in the parking lot, and she'd pick up my daughter. Okay, honey, yeah, I'm going to the meeting, and then I'd watch everybody go in there, and I'd go out and you know, go bar hopping for a couple hours, and you know, go, how was the meeting? Oh, it was fine. Yeah, it was fine. You know, but I knew there was a problem, and it was so funny because the guys in that room knew also, you know, and they said, well, you know, somebody happened to give me a big book and says, well, when you're ready, you know, we'll save you. We'll give you a save you a seat. And anyway, today I have a beautiful family, by the grace of God, and I've worked the steps, and I talk to other alcoholics, and I try to bring them through what I've known and been taught. And it's taken me a little time to realize that, you know, to give it away, you have to give it away to keep it. And that's now coming to light. You know, it's like, yeah, that's the deal. But you know what? I have today. That's my sobriety date is today, basically. And that's all I got is 24 hours. Thank you very much.